Mini episode 408 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another special joint presentation of the FDH Lounge and Sportsology. This is FDH Lounge mini episode number 408. And, of course, with a joint presentation with Sportsology, that means my man, my longtime good friend and Sportsology proprietor and FDH Lounge dignitary, Russ Cohen, is on to serve as a Stanley Cup playoff analyst here. The playoffs getting just underway. And we have with us for this conversation a very, very special guest on the program here who we are proud to welcome back as we have the previous times. Wikipedia says he is the only announcer presently calling all of the Big Four pro sports in North America. Whether or not that's true, I choose to believe it. I choose to believe he is the only one. A special note here, he's been on the program a couple times previously, and every autumn when we're going to do our FDH Lounge week-by-week NFL previews, I always stop at the game that he's on. Whenever we're running through that, I always say, four-time FDH Lounge guest Kenny Albert on the call for this game, along with Moose Johnston and Tony Siragusa. I'm going to have to make that five-time FDH Lounge guest subsequently here. He joins Bob Barker as our only five-time celebrity guests on the program. Pretty good company to have these two guys in there together. Bob Barker and the gentleman joining us here today, Kenny Albert. Kenny, welcome back to the program. It's so good to have you. And Russ, good to talk to you tonight, my friend.
Well, that certainly is good company to be in. Thanks for having me on again, guys.
It's great to have you on. And, Russ, nice to getting to talk to you again, my friend. You forwarded me earlier today, this was very interesting, a Media Day skate picture. You, Kenny, and some other folks here, prior to the Winter Classic, you were rocking a very fancy scarf in that picture, Russ. What's the backstory between you guys in that picture?
Yeah, actually, it's the Stadium Series game. I may have written Winter Classic on the email because I sent it to you quick. But the backstory is, you know, you get invited to skate sometimes. They had the rink up there for longer than a week, I think probably like 2 weeks. And so we had some time in between games and got out there and skate. And Kenny was pretty good, too. We all got out there and had some fun.
Well, that was so much fun. There were only about 30 people there, I think, Russ.
And yeah, maybe.
Yeah, so it was almost like a private skate at Yankee Stadium, and it was tremendous. It was the day after the second game. The Rangers played the Devils on Sunday and the Islanders on Wednesday, and the media was invited to skate on Thursday, and I made sure to take my iPhone out and take some video and some pictures, so it was certainly a memorable experience. In fact, I did the Yankee Red Sox game this past Saturday for Fox Sports 1, which was my first time back at the stadium. I went on Friday to prepare for the game, and I was sort of envisioning where the ice was and where we were skating, so it's hard to believe it was only about 3 months ago.
Yeah, the one thing it taught me is when we were down on the ice, I always wondered about that Yankee Stadium win that Robinson Cano hit all those homers with, and I felt it when I was down there.
It was pretty windy that day.
Well, got a baseball effect here for a winter hockey game. Very, very nice. And not to diminish the skill level involved in that media game, fellas, but at a slightly higher level, let's just say, the NHL playoffs getting underway and a little bit underway, actually, as we speak here today. Before we go and take a look at the divisional pictures here, the way that it's broken up now with the bracket this year and the four divisions in play, before we take a look at that, I just want to get some thoughts from you guys on this realignment, on whether or not the NHL accomplished what they were looking for in year one of this playoff picture. It strikes me that you've got six out of the eight series that feature either new or old rivalries, whether they be divisional rivalries. You have the ancient original six rivalry with Boston and Detroit. On top of that, you have Pittsburgh and Columbus, which is clearly a rivalry that the league would like to see grow. The only one out of these that's really kind of truly random is Montreal and Tampa Bay, but one out of eight is not too bad in that regard, it would seem to me. Kenny, start with you here. What do you think about the way that it shook out this year and the playoff picture as opposed to past years?
Well, the thing about Montreal-Tampa Bay, believe it or not, they are now division rivals, so it could turn into quite the rivalry. But
yes.
I kind of see both sides. I didn't mind the old system where it was 1-8, 2-7, and the top team in the conference played the team with the fewest points in the playoffs. The way it could work out this year, for example, for the Bruins, if they move on, they might play a team with a – they will play a team with a better record than the Rangers or Flyers. So by finishing with the top seed, more points than the number two team, Pittsburgh, if those are the two teams who advance, Pittsburgh could actually get the team with less points because of the divisional setup. But I do like the rivalry aspect of it. You know, we haven't seen Rangers Flyers in the playoffs since 97 and Detroit and Boston since the 1950s. And, you know, you got two of the three California teams playing in the West. So that part of it I like because I think it just makes it even more entertaining for the fans and for the media and those of us who will have the opportunity to attend and work the games. But, you know, I think there's never going to be a perfect system, whether it's the 1-8, 2-7, or the way it is now with the top three in each division and the wild cards. But it's pretty good. You know, we'll see how it goes. It's the first year. One thing I do like is the bracket system for the second round where you know who you're going to play. If the Rangers advance, they know it's going to be the winner of the Pittsburgh-Columbus series. I kind of like that aspect of it.
It's going to be very interesting in that regard, definitely. Well, Russ, what do you think about that? And about Kenny made a very good point there. Even Montreal and Tampa Bay, now being divisional rivals this first year here, they're going to have a history going forward. What do you think about it shaping up?
Yeah, I think they will build it, and there's no better way to build the hate, as we like to say, is in the playoffs. And I grew up on Rangers Flyers, and you know, like Kenny said, it hasn't been since 97. The Rangers haven't won since 86. So it's a long time ago for any of us. So it's fun to see that. It's fun to see Detroit-Boston. And while most people in the world think Boston will win that, you know, some people have picked Detroit. So I know you're happy to hear about that. So it's fun to see that. The second round is good, and it's good that Kenny had mentioned who plays who, because the one thing about these playoffs that isn't good is I can't tell you how many questions, and I'm sure Kenny heard them too. How do these playoffs work? And I was even confused, I would say, for a couple of days early on in the year on how it worked. And really, it just – even 3 days going into the playoffs, people were just like, how does it work again? So I think there were a lot of questions, and now it's sort of, you know, getting a little easier to figure out. And the games are good. I mean, we saw in, you know, Pittsburgh-Columbus today was just a tremendous game as an example.
Yeah, I'm surprised why were people confused by it, though? I'm not sure. It seems pretty straightforward to me as far as two plays three in each division and one plays four. You have the two wildcard teams, and obviously the team with the worst record of the two wildcards plays Boston, who's the number one seed. But it seems pretty straightforward to me. I'm not sure why people were having a tough time with it.
It's just a change, Kenny. It was just one of those things where people just, they don't like change. They knew the old system, and it was hard for them to grasp it, and just as simple as that.
Right. You know, I go back, I'm sure you guys do too. I remember the days of the one, remember the 1-16 when the Rangers played L.A. in the first round one year, and they played St. Louis in the second round and upset the Blues. That, you know, I think they got rid of that system because of travel. You know, you didn't want teams traveling across country, especially. It was a best of three back in those days. You played a two out of three.
Yeah, best of three.
Where you played one game, you know, in New York, for example, game two in L.A., and then game three back in New York. But, you know, back in those days, you could have played anybody with the 1-16, 2-15, et cetera.
Well, the other thing, Kenny, and this actually confused me up until a couple of days ago, with this whole, to borrow a term from March Madness, pod system that they're using here, the divisional pods. You're looking at something now, I think we all know this isn't going to happen, no disrespect to the Dallas Stars, but you're looking at them as possibly the Pacific Division, quote-unquote, champions coming out of that pod. They don't even play in that division. The fact that they're playing the number one
seed. Right, that's kind of a strange aspect of it with the way – I kind of like the wild card system as opposed to the top four in each division making it, because you could have a fifth-place team, for example, with a better record than the fourth-place team in the other division. So I do like that aspect of it, but – it is kind of strange to have a team playing in the opposite division. Now, in the East, that's not the case. As it worked out, Columbus plays Pittsburgh, their division rivals, and the wild card Detroit in the other division does play Boston.
Yes, and actually, let's start there with the Atlantic Division, taking a look at this, and Russ alluded previously to me being a shameless Detroit Red Wings hawk. I have to say, even I am not picking the Red Wings to win this series. The Wings did play Boston tough, tougher than just about anybody in the regular season, but I'm going to say Boston in six in that one here. My pick is Boston over Tampa in the quote-unquote divisional final. Moving into the next round here, Boston is just the team that everybody really expects to come out of it. They have been so strong all the way through the year. President's Cup winners. Again, they're going to have their hands full with a scrappy Detroit team. It's very young, but again, missing Hank Zetterberg, and you know, Jimmy Howard hasn't really been on his game this year. So in terms of how that division goes, Kenny, do you see it being the conventional wisdom being pretty apparent and pretty true here in terms of it's Boston and everybody else, or do you think there's anybody that really could step up and give them a run for that?
No, I think it'll be Boston. I'm sure the Red Wings will win, you know, one, two games, and who knows, maybe even a third. But, no, I would expect Boston to move on and defeat either Tampa Bay or Montreal in the next round, although crazy things do happen in Boston-Montreal series if, in fact, it is the Canadiens. But they just look so strong from goal on out with a terrific group of defensemen led by Chara and then four solid lines up front. Now the one thing to keep in mind is when Boston won the Cup in 2011, the next year they lost in the first round to Washington, and it was
right.
You know, probably a case of playing late into June and then trying to defend that championship, and they did go to Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Finals last year, so they have played a lot of hockey over the last 4 years, but I'd be pretty surprised if the Bruins did not get out of the division into the conference finals.
Sure. How do you see it stacking up, Russ? I can't see that you would disagree with too much of that.
No, I don't. And the thing about the Bruins is, you know, if you want to play a finesse game with them, they'll beat you as a finesse game. If you want to try and get physical, they'll beat you being physical. They have all those different kinds of players. And Chara is still the X factor. I mean, nobody has a Zdeno Chara, nobody in the league, and that's still a big factor. Rask is probably going to be the Vezina winner. So, I mean, it's really hard to imagine them losing. I did have Tampa picked. It's funny. Any team who I seem to, like, pick as a dark horse this year had major injuries. And I liked Tampa before things started, and then all of a sudden Bishop goes down. And of course, you know, they don't look like the same team, but they're going to be tough. I will say this. If it is Boston-Montreal, we all love it. But I have to tell people of Boston, buy a rental car when you drive it into Montreal. Don't bring in your car with Boston plates into that parking lot because you won't come out seeing your car there. Just a little hint.
That is a blood feud that I'm not sure that people outside of the hardcore hockey circles really understand. Some of the most vicious smack talk I have seen in sports forums has involved Boston and Montreal fans. It is going to be a thing to behold if they meet up in the next round. No question about it. In the Metropolitan Division, almost kind of a similar picture, isn't it? You've got Pittsburgh in there that everyone thinks of, I think, is kind of being head and shoulders above the rest of the division. They didn't really get much of a run from anybody for the number one seed during the course of the season here. My pick in that division is Pittsburgh over the Rangers in the next round subsequently. So, Kenny, as far as how this shakes out here for Pittsburgh, again, they're not at full strength, but shockingly, Sid Crosby has been the one guy who has been healthy and played an entire season there. Questions in net with Fleury this time of year based on how he's gone the last couple of years, but much like in the Atlantic Division, does the Metropolitan Division have a prohibitive favorite?
No, I don't think so. I think it's a little bit closer than you know, the Boston situation. With Pittsburgh, you know, even if Fleury went 82-0 this season, it wouldn't have mattered. It, you know, it's the playoff performance based on what's gone on the last 2 years, and he did give up the three goals tonight, but they win the game 4-3. I think Columbus will give him a good fight. You know, I don't know if they'll win more than one game, but Columbus is an up-and-coming team. Obviously, New York Ranger fans very familiar with some of their players, and John Davidson, who's done a tremendous job running the operation. And then the Ranger Flyer series, two teams that finished 3 points apart of the regular season. They split the season series, both winning two on home ice. But I think the Rangers have the decided edge in goal and on defense with Lundqvist and, you know, the Mason injury situation. And I don't think it makes a difference as far as Mason or Emery. I think they're probably in the same ballpark as far as where they are goaltending-wise in their careers right now. But when you look at McDonough, Girardi, and Staal, I think I'd put them up against any other team's top three defensemen. You know, in Boston, you could take Chara and any of their other two, and you have three great D-men in St. Louis, but the way they've played over the last 40 games, it should be a great matchup against some really skilled Flyers forwards.
I agree with that assessment. And, Russ, I would like to think, as a lifelong Clevelander and someone who does loathe Dalton Pittsburgh, that your Rangers could step up in the next round subsequently against Pittsburgh. I certainly don't think Columbus is the team to take them out. But, again, do you see that, as Kenny does, as being a little bit of a closer call for Pittsburgh coming out of the Metropolitan than for Boston coming out of the Atlantic?
Yeah, and actually it's kind of interesting with Pittsburgh, because Fleury even had the defense in a press conference where he said, hey, look, I've won a cup, and not a lot of goalies have won a cup. And I was saying that, too. You sort of feel like bad because he gets pigeonholed, and yet he made it to one cup, lost in another cup. And I was on a show, and I said, name me another goalie in the modern era who's even got that on his resume now. So all that said, we all pick on them in the playoffs. It's not just that. It's their defense. It's not great. They have a lot of offensive firepower. And Columbus is just like a really scrappy team that can grind it out. I'm surprised they score three. A lot of times they have trouble scoring three. Bob is a really good goalie, and I love what he's done this year. But, again, just not enough to beat Pittsburgh. As far as Flyers, Rangers, I did pick Rangers in seven. And what was interesting in Flyers camp today is it seemed like Ryan McDonagh is more of a marked man than anybody on the Rangers offense. And that sort of shows you the change in the NHL and even in the Rangers, because, you know, even with guys like Nash and St. Louis and Richards, they're more worried about a guy like McDonagh on both sides of the puck. They talk about Lundqvist. They know what they need to do. They do have guys like Mark Strait, who has seen it from the Flyers rivalry standpoint and the Islanders rivalry standpoint. And the one thing about the Flyers is, yeah, they know either goalie. They're pretty much playing the same game. The only difference, even Craig Berube said, probably the biggest difference between the two goalies is the stick handling of Mason. Otherwise, not that big a difference. And I'd tend to agree with them on that. The bounce back ability for the Flyers is great, and that's why I picked it to seven, because every time they seem to lose one and you want to count them out, they come back the next game and win. So they've just been able to do that all year. It's inexplicable. There's no stat for it. But I think that'll be a really great series. And unfortunately, when Rangers come out of that series, even if they're going up against a weakened Pittsburgh, I think they're going to be weakened too. And the Rangers haven't fared well against Pittsburgh in the playoffs, so I wouldn't look too favorably on that unless there's some sort of change injury-wise, as we know.
Quick follow-up on Philly with you, Russ. You and I have previously differed on the program as to whether or not Claude Giroux is a slam dunk top 10 guy in this league. Any reassessment on your part after the stretch run about that?
Right now he's a slam dunk top 10. His last 2-3 months were as good as anybody in the NHL. I was saying all year, and I didn't get a vote this year, but I will again next year. I would have probably put Getzlaff as the heart, and Giroux would have made the ballot. He just didn't have a full enough season. If you match him up stat-wise against a guy like Getzlaff, he would have probably lost, and Crosby would be the other guy in the ballot. But he was there, and he has been a real leader, and he has scored some huge goals. And, you know, he's still a fairly young guy and a guy who's still got upside. So I think he has earned that.
Yeah, so I agree with all of that. I think he definitely is a franchise player. Going to the Western Conference, taking a look at the Central, Kenny, this is the best division in hockey, I think most would agree, and therefore I think probably the most intriguing, because a team that people have, a lot of people still, as a real favorite to win the Stanley Cup, Chicago, isn't even the top seed in their own division, but in my mind anyways, they are still the favorite when you look at the really cold streak that St. Louis has been on recently, the fact that Colorado is such a young team, and that some of these advanced stats that some of the eggheads will want to tell you about will indicate that they had kind of a fluky kind of a season. Yeah, I've got Chicago over Minnesota, actually, in the divisional finals here. Kenny, how do you see this one shaping up? Because this looks to be super wild to me, no pun intended.
Yeah, it does. And Steve, guys, I have to run after this one. I have another call at 11:20.
Gotcha.
But I agree with you on Chicago. I think they're coming out of the division. It's unfortunate under the new system that they have to play St. Louis in the first round, 200-point teams, but that's the way it worked out. And I think it'll be the Blackhawks. Blues really struggled down the stretch. They did acquire Ryan Miller, who I think will have a good series, but the question is, will St. Louis be able to score enough against Chicago? And Kane and Taves obviously coming back from injuries are wild cards as well. Colorado had a great regular season. I voted for Patrick Roy as coach of the year, going from 28th place overall to third. quite the accomplishment. And I think they will beat Minnesota. It should be a good series. You know, I think Colorado has the edge in goal with Varlamov over Brizgalov at this point. Two of the Russian goaltenders going up against one another. But I think it'll be Colorado and Chicago, and I look for the Blackhawks to move on from there.
Kenny, before I pivot to Russ, just want to say thank you so much for your time. It is always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you so much. Don't be a stranger.
Thanks. Hopefully we can do it again during these playoffs.
Excellent.
Yep, see you in Philly.
Thank you. Really appreciate it. All right. Great to have on Kenny Albert with us. And, again, pivoting here to Russ to get your thoughts on that. Follow up, if you would, please, your thoughts on what Kenny had to say on this division. He thinks a little bit more of Colorado's chances to move on than do I. But any way you slice it, these two series, you know, maybe the most intriguing of this round.
They are. I'll start with Chicago in the sense that I think people are sleeping on them. They had a chance to rest their stars down the stretch. You can call them injured, whatever, but they were resting them, and they were smart. I think they have the best chance of repeating since Detroit. I think they're poised to do it. I think for as much as people want to say that they don't have good enough goaltending and they're probably not the same team and everything else, I think they have the most depth in the NHL. And so I really think they're going to make it. Colorado will be my crazy pick. I've picked them to sweep because I think Minnesota, what's happened to them in net is going to be unsettling because Ilya Brizgalov can be a very unsettling force on a team in net. Trust me, I've seen it happen. And I know he won a few games down the stretch, but now with the playoffs, with a lot of pressure, and Colorado's going to really put a lot of offensive pressure on Brizgalov. I think they're going to unnerve him. I think we're going to end up seeing Kempner in goal at some point, and I think Colorado will surprise. Again, we all have to thank the Hockey News for picking Colorado dead last this year. They couldn't have been more right.
Well, I had Colorado picked pretty low as well. I didn't have them last in the league, but, yeah, I had them certainly missing the playoffs, as did a lot of people. So, again, they have really kind of gelled and come together ahead of schedule. There are a lot of comparisons between them and Chicago at the start of their run and how quickly they materialized with their young core of guys. I think Colorado may be a team that we end up coming back to here if we talk about the Pacific because of another question I want to ask you. But in terms of looking at the Pacific, I've got it being L.A. Over Anaheim in the quote-unquote divisional final here, a little rematch of the Dodger Stadium game in the playoffs. In terms of how it's going to shake out, do you see it as being not necessarily inevitable, but at least very likely that that's the matchup we get? Or in the likeliest scenario,
no.
I guess, if that's not going to happen, can San Jose finally step up against a playoff-hardened team like L.A.?
Yes, I think they can finally do it. I made it a point. I don't know what got into me, but I made it a point to follow around the Sharks a little bit this year when they were on the East Coast, and I wanted to sort of see what made them tick. So, you know, I got to see them in New York and in Philly, and what I saw was a team that has a very underrated top six. I think you could argue they have a strong, or if not the strongest, top six forwards in the league. Then I look at their defense, and Mark-Edward Vlasic is not the sexy name, but he is a tremendous player. Just does everything you want him to do, makes all the big plays, all the big stops. And the other thing that San Jose does really well is they get their pucks on sticks to deflect shots, to make you change your angle of your shot, just these little things that sort of screw up your game. And at the end of a game now, they can employ the trap on defense if they have a lead, where they didn't used to have a good enough defense to be able to do that. So I look at that, and even I've heard Joe Thornton talk about playing defense this year. Like, where would you hear that? So I'm very impressed with them. I think they will beat the Kings. I think Mike Richards hasn't been the same for the Kings. Gabrick fades in and out of the playoffs, as you know. Listen, I mean, they have some great players, too. We all know that they're great net. We all know that it's kind of interesting, too, that they have some players like Dustin Brown that hasn't really shown up this year. Justin Williams, can he keep doing it? I mean, it's just, you know, we're asking this guy for a long time to score at a very high level. I think they're ripe for the picking there, so I think they're gonna advance. And I think Chicago will then beat San Jose. It'd be an interesting matchup, because you would have
Chicago going up against their old goalie in Antti Niemi, who, again, has had a really great season, and he's won a Stanley Cup, and nobody gives him credit.
Yes, that's a very good point about that as well, if he would be facing Chicago for those stakes. Well, and the other thing about San Jose as well, and this is a very underrated point about them and about the Shark Tank, you essentially have this is where Raider fan goes when it's not football season. That is a brutal place to play. You don't have batteries being chucked at you, but it's just this side of that line, Russ.
Yeah, I was talking to a friend today about who might have the greatest home ice advantage in hockey, and I have to admit it's not what it used to be. Like, Flyers players love going to MSG. They love the atmosphere. It looks great. The fan, they don't fear. It's hard to say anybody fears going anywhere anymore, but I think teams don't like going to the Shark Tank. I think that's one of the places in the league that the opposing teams don't like going. And I think that is a big edge for San Jose.
Yes, I definitely think that's the case. Well, it's funny because I indicated we might get back to Colorado a second ago here, because the next question I wanted to ask you, once we hopscotched the four divisions, but you ended up answering it for me with it being San Jose, is you'll look at the four teams that were in the conference finals last year. They are the only teams to have won the Stanley Cup since 2009. This is a tremendous era of continuity. Pittsburgh, Boston,
yep.
Chicago, and L.A. They were the four that I picked at the beginning of this year to make it back there. I don't necessarily like to go with the grain on things. I am the guy, among other things, who picked Denver to be under 20 points in the Super Bowl for the first time all year, and people told me I was crazy. So I don't always like to go with the chalk, but I did, and I'm staying with the chalk. So my question was going to be to you, who's the most likely to puncture that gap there? And you've answered that for me already, that it'll be
yep.
San Jose, because you see them taking out L.A. Let's just follow it down the line a little bit more. Who's the second most likely team if one of the big four is going to get knocked off?
The second most likely, I guess, would be Pittsburgh. If there was a team that was going to have a hiccup or have a bad time
not counting
in net
them.
And have to – Not counting that.
Not counting Pittsburgh. Somebody other than Boston, Pittsburgh, L.A., and Chicago.
Oh, I see. Someone other than
I guess it would be
good
Colorado.
Question. Yeah, it could be. I mean, I really couldn't count them out, because even though we could all say they're sort of weak on the blue line, there's something that Patrick Roy has instilled in these guys, and I've seen these guys a little bit more than I usually do, and Nathan MacKinnon is an absolute horse. Even Stastny has now come back to form, where maybe a couple of years ago people were wondering where his game went. Ryan O'Reilly is a hell of a player. They
uh-huh.
really do have a nice mix on offense. So, yeah, maybe it would be them.
Interesting. Yeah, if it were to be if it was a Colorado-San Jose Western Conference final, that is something that nobody would really see coming. For as much emphasis,
no.
I think, as everyone is still putting on Chicago and L.A.
No, it's true. I mean, definitely no one would see that coming. But, it is kind of funny, because I had that same conversation I had with a guy. He was looking at the draft lottery, and he goes, look at the teams in the draft lottery. It seems to be the same old teams. And I have to admit, it's hard to get away from that. It's what it basically shows me in this league is sometimes we all go too crazy, like before the season started, I picked the Capitals as a team to make it, and I stuck with them for a long time, and then I jumped off the Capitals and jumped on Tampa, and then, of course, as we know, Ben Bishop went down, so who knows if he'll be back or not. But it's just one of those things where even if you're picking high every year like Edmonton, it used to be like, 5 years, they'll be back, and they'll be right in it, and it's much longer than 5 years now, and they're not even competitive. They're less than competitive. I've not been a Dallas Eakins fan anyhow. But it's just one of those things now where the NHL, it could take you 10 years or more to become a very competitive team. Florida had that 1 year, 2 years ago where they got a little head of steam going, but not a lot. I was even saying for Florida, they've made it to the Stanley Cup once on the back of John Van Beesbrook, and I don't think they've ever been back even as far as the conference finals, right? So –
Yeah.
It's just amazing how some of these bottom dwellers continue. We talk about that in the NBA a lot, but I don't think we talk about it in the NHL enough. And so while we all think that Buffalo should be able to scratch and claw their way out of this, it's going to be harder than you think. And for people that say, oh, well, Pittsburgh got all those picks and it set them up, Yeah, maybe so, but Craig Patrick still had to trade up and get Marc-Andre Fleury, and they still had to do some other things, because even with Malkin, even with Crosby, even with Fleury, if you don't have the right mix, obviously it's still not enough to win.
Well, it's an interesting era, it seems to me, because between the lockouts of 95 and 04, you had a lot of continuity as far as the top teams in there, Detroit and Colorado and Dallas and to a certain extent Buffalo. You did have some of that, but this seems to be an even more extreme case of that the last two or three years, it seems to me. It almost looks temporarily like the way that the NBA always is. The NBA always has a permanent overclass. MLB, you have a lot of mobility up and down from year to year with a lot of teams. The NFL really seemed to be going to this more so the last year. The fact that Seattle, Denver, New England, and San Francisco were the teams everybody saw coming all year, and they were in the semifinals of the league. It's kind of strange how that's mirroring the NHL right now. You know, continuity across sports, maybe with the exception of MLB, you know, it might be only momentary, Russ, but this is a heck of a moment across three of those four sports.
It is, and something else that I find kind of odd is, you know, we've always sort of questioned Bruce Boudreau in the playoffs and how he makes weird moves. And, you know, tonight right now, Anaheim's going to manhandle Dallas. We all know that. Anaheim's a terrific team. But to put Frederick Anderson in net, a little bit surprising. And Gibson's still in the mix, too, I understand, because, you know, he was 3-0 down the stretch. And all of a sudden, Jonas Hiller, who was really the guy all year, doesn't start the playoffs. Don't you find that kind of odd? And I think that's going to end up derailing Anaheim in the end, where when they play the wrong team, I think Anderson's going to get exposed a little bit, even though you can look at his numbers and his record was great, but he doesn't have playoff experience. It's just kind of odd the way that's being handled.
Exactly. And what if they draw L.A. in the next round? I mean, L.A. is the very epitome right now of a playoff-hardened team. It's Stanley Cup champions 2 years ago, losers in the Western Conference Final last year to the eventual Stanley Cup champions. So that could really be a little bit destabilizing for them psychologically, right? It's a cross-town battle. You have the extra pressure of that as well. And it would seem like the last thing they would need is one more question mark.
Right. And now all of a sudden Boudreau is sort of, in my mind, put that out there and put that question mark out there. And you know, I figured they'd get past the first round. It's Teemu Selanne's last season. It's really his last season. He said he's not coming back. I give him credit for that because it's hard for athletes to actually say that. But why does it always seem like it's the Euros that say it and they mean it? You know, Jágr's been, other than Jágr, because he's been coming back every year. But, you know, Lidstrom said, I'm going, he went. Selanne says he's going to go, he is going to go. So it'll be nice to see him, and I was looking for him tonight, and I'll be looking for him in a couple more games. But I'll tell you, these West Coast games are great games, but for people on the East Coast, you know, you got to put your toothpicks in your eyes, and it's tough. It's tough. Some of these games are going to end at 1 in the morning, 1:30, as they go into double overtime and triple overtime. It gets
absolutely grueling. Well, you know what? And you know, you talk about, you know, postseason choking reputations here. What about in the second round if it's Bruce Boudreau coaching Anaheim versus San Jose? One of those elements has to be in the conference finals.
Right. Something has to give at that point. Well, and to me, that's something that's great about sports is we could come up with all the stats, and I don't believe in any stats until you start making them in the playoffs. I don't look at past history. I don't look at, like, the jinx that the Flyers have going at MSG, 6 or 7 in a row. I don't care. I do care that St. Louis has lost 6 in a row going into the playoffs. That's why I think they're getting knocked off, because I think Hitch has sort of worn this team down and maybe needs to make a few tweaks to it, because, as we know, the way his system is, he can wear you down. But it is sort of an amazing thing.
It really is. And again, not so much the NFL, but certainly MLB, NBA, NHL, it's a series of waves going through the year, and you just got to kind of surf it at the right point in time. And when you're coming in on the low end of the wave here, when you're coming in at low tide, you've lost 6 in a row, you gagged up the regular season division championship. I would agree with you. St. Louis is in one of the worst places that you could be at this point, and they're facing the defending champion.
There's also a charm. There's some sort of charm about the hockey playoffs that maybe isn't lost just on me. And, like, as an example, Sean Couturier is interviewing at his locker today, and he goes, oh, he puts his finger, like, wait a minute, puts teeth in, you know, just in case the cameras come by. I think there's a certain charm about that because you don't get to play in the NHL and really keep your teeth, do you? I mean, the only guy who I can think of that has is Logan Couture. I remember when Logan Couture got drafted, he was one of the few young guys that actually wears a mouth guard. And I said, Logan, are those all of your teeth? And he said, yes. And he proudly showed me, and he says, I wear a mouth guard, and that's why, because my mother would kill me. But for every Logan Couture, everybody else loses their teeth, and they sort of just know that it's going to happen. So I just think it's the price you pay to play in that sport, right?
We know hockey players are tough, but I will tell you from personal painful experience, it is almost underrated how tough they are, because the nerve endings in the mouth, unbeknownst to anybody that hasn't had any kind of problems, that's one of the worst areas in the body, my friend. I have had impacted wisdom teeth. I had an infection under a crown just a couple of months ago, and it will bring you to your knees. It will absolutely bring you to your knees. The notion of just having them ripped out of your grill with a puck, I can't even imagine that. I can't do justice to the pain that they must be feeling. That's for all the talk about they're tough guys and everything like that, and that's visual evidence of it. I'm here to tell you, unless you've been through any of these things, you have no idea.
Yeah, I'd say it's kind of rough. I can't say that I know what you're feeling because I've never had any dental work done. I still have no cavities. I've never even gotten drilled.
Lifetime undefeated streak.
it's an unbeaten streak right now. That it's pretty good for me, 50 years. But the thing about it is, really, if you think about it, I know I've been hit with a baseball in the eye. Now, I was younger. My brother threw it. I didn't catch it. And I was at the eye doctor, and it killed me, and it blew up. But I got past that. I think I could catch a ball and take that hit in the NFL, that one hit, jarring hit where, you know, your back's getting cracked and you're getting crushed to the ground, and I think I'd be okay with that. I know after watching so many games and looking at guys right after games and looking at guys – remember Braden Coburn's eye a couple of years ago in the press box when I sort of told you that it was just hanging on by a thread? Things like that. There is no way you could ever want, and again, I've played in silly media games, and there is no way I'm going to stand in front of a puck coming at me 90 miles an hour to block it and potentially block it with my face like Ian LaPerrier did. No way.
Yeah. Yeah. The guts on these guys is just unbelievable. And looking at big picture for the playoffs this year, I'm going to say Boston over – Pittsburgh in six in the East Finals, and Chicago over L.A. in six. I'm going to say a reverse of last year's outcome, Boston over Chicago in six in the final. Let's say Zdeno Chara for the Conn Smythe. How do you see it shaking out at the end, Russ, champion and Conn Smythe?
I'd say Boston over Pittsburgh as well. I think six is the right pick on that. I think Chicago over San Jose. I think they could take him out in five. I think Chicago, once they get rolling, very hard team to beat in a seven-game series. I think that they've become the hardest team in almost any sport to beat in a seven-game series. If you're going to make me pick a Conn Smythe now with no games on the line, I'll go with Jonathan Toews as a safe bet. And what else did you want me to pick?
Pretty much just that. Yeah, as far as a champion and who you thought for – Conn Smythe. Let me ask you to follow up on that. If Chicago wins, and if even if Toews doesn't get Conn Smythe, for as much as the league goes out of their way, and I understand that he had the best season once again, at least statistically, and will win the Hart Trophy. Sid Crosby as face of the league. If Jonathan Toews has three Stanley Cups and the same two Olympic gold medals as Sid Crosby, at what point does this start to get a little bit ridiculous about being forced to be in the shadow of Sidney Crosby? This is the era of Sidney Crosby. Really? It starts to look a little bit ridiculous to me, and I say this as somebody with no brief for the Chicago Blackhawks myself, but just in the interest of fairness, Russ.
Well, I think then it sort of becomes the issue of like Gretzky and Lemieux. People always had that argument, too, and I guess it would be a fair argument. And look, Crosby's got the 500-point season. Nobody's going to argue that. Nobody else has that. Who could do that? Right? Nobody can do that. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't necessarily bring you championships, and Taves definitely brings you championships. So they've always been two different kinds of players. I've been lucky to really been able to cover them from the very beginning on. Taves, I even had an amazing half-hour to 45-minute interview, an exclusive, like, at the very beginning of his career, maybe first year. And I know I'll never get that again because I just don't have enough clout. And so I think about it and I say, wow, you know, look at what these two guys have done. But you could really make the argument that it could shift. If they wanted to, but here's the thing, and I think the reason why we wouldn't see the shift, just that little bit of extra in your voice talking about Sidney Crosby is what a lot of people get, good and bad.
Yes.
They don't get that way about Taves. Everybody likes Taves. So Sidney Crosby brings out that heat that you like to see in wrestling. He brings that out in hockey fans too.
Yeah, I mean, I liken it to, again, you know, my most hated team, well, Pittsburgh, but I still say remnants of Colorado from the great rivalry with Detroit. And my whole thing was, Joe Sakic, hey, I could have rooted for that guy if he played in any other jersey. And I somewhat kind of
right.
feel that way about Taves. I really have nothing against him other than the fact that he plays for a rival of my team. And now somewhat less of a rival, now they're separated by conference. So I get what you're saying.
Right.
I don't feel visceral towards Taves as I do Crosby.
No.
And I think that's the way a lot of people do. I think you've summed it up perfectly.
Yeah, I think, you know, from that marketing aspect, he is the guy to market. It's the same, you know, Major League Baseball, Derek Jeter's last year. Who hates Derek Jeter? Nobody's a bigger Yankee hater than me. I can't hate the guy. Absolutely can't do
yeah.
it. So I think Taves is sort of that way. We look at him. He's very workmanlike. He plays the game the right way. He's an honest player. He never says anything wrong. He never does anything wrong. He's not afraid to go out on a limb and say things, but he just is a sensible guy. It's just, you know, one of those things where I just think Crosby gives you that weird mix, great talent, best offensive talent in the league, most hated. Because even Gretzky wasn't the most hated.
Sure. You're right about that. And am I correct in saying that in the last year or two, both with Taves winning another gold medal, winning the Stanley Cup last year, and with the things going quite the other end of the spectrum pretty much for Ovechkin. It used to be Crosby or Ovechkin, Crosby or Ovechkin. We've pretty much put that to rest, right? If we're going to be talking about anybody else, it's Taves at this point. Is there even one
yes.
person on God's green earth that's still saying, is it Crosby or Ovechkin?
There was. About a month and a half ago on Twitter, or not on Twitter, on Facebook, I was getting demolished when I said, because there was something said about Crosby and Ovechkin, and I said, listen, Ovechkin's not even in the conversation on his planet. And some people tore into me, you know, and I'm sure they were Capitals people, and they just were killing me. In the end, I know I'm right, and it was probably
yeah.
a painful thing. And I like Alex as a person. I do. I think he's very misunderstood. I think it's very hard to coach him because, yeah, he's not going to play defense. But did Pavel Bure play defense? No. So who scores 50 goals every year? Nobody. He does. So you just have to figure out as a coach how to win with him. Look, if you put him on the Red Wings, you don't think the Red Wings would win? I do.
Sure.
I think Babcock would figure it out. Right. So I just think it's one of those things. But is he in the same league as Sidney Crosby? He's not even close. Not even close.
Yeah, exactly. I think if it's anybody, it's Crosby or it's Taves. And, again, this postseason
yes.
we'll have a little bit to say about that. And, again, potentially they could wind up in the finals. That is certainly not a long shot for them to end up going head-to-head
here. Taves
is
a lot like Sakic, too. You know,
yeah.
Taves is a lot like Sakic. And Joe Sakic was a very boring guy off the ice. He
mm-hmm.
really didn't say much. He just won. And he won, and he piled up 100-point seasons, too. And that's exactly, you know, you're going to look at the end and you're going to be like, wow, look at Taves' career. But he is just not going to, you know, get you going the same way that other players might. And Joe Sakic, you know, they called him Ordinary Joe, and he sort of was, but not on the ice.
Well, in that analogy, I didn't much like Peter Forsberg, so maybe Kane is the Forsberg of this comparison
yeah,
here.
Yeah.
We'll have to see how that shakes out. But as just about all the sands have run through the hourglass here, a pleasure to get to talk about this with you, Russ, and previously Kenny Albert, a part of our conversation as well.
Yeah,
it
Kenny
will be a great,
great
Stanley Cup final. Looking forward to following your coverage on Sportsology. Thanks for everything, my friend.
All right, thanks.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.